Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke. I'm your art barista at Let's Talk Art, serving up great art for your listening pleasure. Today, I am so excited to be chatting with speaker, entrepreneur, musician, author, Corey Poirier. We're talking about his new book, The Enlightened Passenger, which totally blew me away when I read it. It's a story about a traveler on a plane who gets stuck next to a really talkative passenger. Oh, great. I even have a special link on the post. If you buy it, you definitely want to use it. Enjoy.
Hi, Corey.
Hi, Brooke.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Awesome. I'm doing great. I just finished your book yesterday. Oh my gosh, this was so great. And I love it. I love this kind of stuff. I love like Napoleon Hill type stuff. I love Jack Canfield, all those stuff. The research came from, apparently. And I was just wondering, like, how did you, first of all, what made you see the need for this kind of book?
Honestly, for me, both the, let's call it the inspiration for it, feeling there was a need for it, because I will say this, I don't want to, and I know this sounds, I don't know if it sounds cliche or if it sounds like I'm just saying something to say it, but I really don't have any vested interest or push to put a book out into the world that the world doesn't need. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, in fact, I'd be happy to write a chapter in a book and still get my writing out there than write a full book that isn't going to contribute in a major way. Okay. And so just to back that up, I have 20, I don't even know the number, but say 25, 26 books I've been involved with in some capacity. Mm-hmm. Literally, this is, I could say the third, but technically maybe even second, but let's say third book that I put out into the world. Mm-hmm. And it's been like years between each. And why that is because for me, I don't know. I think I don't know the number that I've heard, but hundreds of thousands of books a year being released when you take in all self-published. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to put a book into the world unless I feel like it's contributing something. Right. So that's why I guess the drive to do it was because I felt it was contributing something. As far as even a little bit of the backstory, you know, when you mentioned some of the people that are referenced in the book is loosely based on my life.
Okay.
So I've interviewed 7,500 of the world's top thought leaders. Right. And so to give you an example of how it's loosely based on my life, in the book, Treb, as the character says, like something to the effect of, I was in the green room backstage with Les Brown and I asked him what synchronicity is. And he said, it's God's way of staying anonymous. Like, just say that was one example in the book. Well, mm-hmm. That was what Les Brown said to me in his living room in Atlanta. And wow. I basically took that and turned it into the character sharing what he learned from Les Brown. So it's funny because the book is fictional, characters mm-hmm. are fictional, mm-hmm. but it's loosely based on reality.
Okay.
And so for me, what pushed me to want to write the book, it's built around a question that I've asked thousands of times. That's what triggered the idea. I had a middle, beginning, and an end, and mm-hmm. nothing else. Mm-hmm. And then I like to write where it's really true organic writing. So I sat down and then the characters came to life. So for me, the drive was, I've learned all these lessons and insights. Mm-hmm. I could share them in a book like one of my previous books, The Book of Why. I can share them in a book like that, where it's a self-help nonfiction book. Mm-hmm. I can share it in and I have been working on a book and it's kept, dying on the vine and then eventually it'll come back to life. But a book similar to Think and Grow Rich, which was a game changing book for me. Mm-hmm. And so I could share those insights in that style of book. But when this idea came to me, I thought about how The Celestine Prophecy, The Alchemist, Og Mandino, almost all of his books with like The Greatest Salesman in the World, The Richest Man in Babylon. I thought about all these fictional parable books mm-hmm. that taught me in a way that was different than all the self-help books that I read. And I thought, you know what? It was like they tricked me into learning, which I thought was fascinating. And so through the story. And so I think for me, it was like, here's an opportunity to deliver similar to what Napoleon Hill did, because I've done interviews in a similar capacity, to deliver the way Napoleon Hill did, but through the eyes of characters and a story. Mm-hmm. And so I know it's a long way to get around to. That's kind of where the idea came in. That's why I felt the world needed it. It took me thousands and thousands and thousands of hours to learn what are the top 10 lessons that I've learned from the top achievers and applied in my own life. Mm-hmm. And this was my way to share that, but in a unique format that's not the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's, I think, and I was going to comment, because fiction is kind of, I've written nonfiction, and that's, I would say that's easy compared to like a narrative, like a fiction, because you got plot, which I didn't realize when I attempted, until I attempted to try it. You have to do like a plot structure. You have to have a beginning and an end and a middle and a climax. And that's very hard to do. How do you, I applaud you for the way you have melded the two in such a interesting, thought provoking way.
Well, I mean, well, thank you. And I have to say, to your point, I'll correct that. For me, writing it actually wasn't the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge for me was making the time to write it.
Yes.
And so what I mean by that is it's easy to have excuses. And I mean, the amount of things I'm juggling some days makes my eyes go crazy, like right. Turn inward. And yeah. To add into that, writing a book is a daunting thing. So I would love to say, and I really should be that person that writes every day. Like I do write, but work on a book right. Every day. And then eventually it's just ready. But mm-hmm. I'm not that guy yet. I might change that. Right. But that other book I showed, that book was 4 years in the making. And it was like, okay, I have time to write now. I'm going to write. This book here, I had the idea for a year. Knew what I wanted it to be about. Mm-hmm. Told my wife, she's like, that's a fascinating idea. You need to put that into print. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't do anything with it. And then we were going on a trip, a staycation to a cottage.
Yeah.
And so when I'm on vacation with the family, every now and then, like, this is the kind of thing I'll do. I'll write. If they go to the beach, and I go to the beach with them maybe 5 times out of 7,
mm-hmm.
but then a couple times I'll stay back. And that's how I wrote half the book.
Uh-huh.
Was okay. Like 2 weeks they yeah. would go into town and then I would just stay and write. And so I wrote half it that way. That took me like 2 weeks, half the book was done. Uh-huh. Then it took another year to sit down and do that again.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is, what's fascinating to me is the book came easy. What came hard was making time to write the book.
Yes.
So like, I'm one of those style of writers that when I sit down, either it's easy and fluid and I run with it, or I get back up and move on and do something else. Like
yeah.
I write music and I've been on a break for a while, but all the songs I've written, let's say 100 songs, 95 were written in real time. Like I didn't ask myself what rhymes with orange,
because yeah.
nothing does. I didn't ask myself that. I literally just sat down and went, here's the idea in my head. And then the story came to life. Like, I don't even, it's weird. Like, I don't even say what rhymes with. Like, I know a lot of working songwriters that would be in Nashville and they're like 40 hours a week writing.
Yeah.
They will really sit down and go, okay, what's a good idea here? What would rhyme with that? What would work with that? That, for whatever reason, that's not the way I write anything. Mm-hmm. I don't plot out anything.
Yeah.
And I like it because it feels organic to me because it all comes to life in front of me.
Right.
But at the same time, it worries me because I don't know how to do the other way. So if it ever leaves me.
Right.
I'm hooped, I guess. But again, not sure that I answered the question fully, but for me, the writing of it and merging the two wasn't as hard as finding the time to do that. But what I will say is in between writing, some of this, like I, especially right after I finish writing and I'm back to normal, mm-hmm. then the ideas are still coming. So I have to jot things down, like just on a pen and go, oh my God, that's a good thing to add there. So
yeah.
I do write some of it that way and thinking of when, and if I'm a week away from starting to write again, I'm like, oh, I should add this in. I
yeah.
do that in between. But as far as the writing, like I said, it's usually very organic.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think, and you do a lot of other things as well. You're a speaker, you're a musician, like you said, and you do, you've written other books. And I'm sure, and you're a serial entrepreneur and all this stuff. So, I mean, I think all of that stuff kind of was, you know, already floating around in the mind and kind of just, so just with all of that stuff going on and all the knowledge you have from the literature that you read. And I think that, and plus the discipline of making time to write, I think that all came together to make the book. And I think that's how it happened.
I feel it definitely was. And yeah, I mean, the amount of other things I'm juggling, like I said, is sometimes insane. Mm-hmm. I will say, you know, since you read the book, I will say, just so you know, and those that are listening, I don't mention this often, and I probably won't mention it a lot, and you may not hear me mention it again, you know, more cool. than a handful of times. But book two and book three of this is a series now, they're written.
Oh,
so
cool.
The interesting part is, yeah, like, so those characters didn't feel like they were done yet, even though the book had closure. And when I was done of it, I thought it was done. And then I was flying to England for two separate events we were running, separate occasions. And I wrote book number two on one trip and book number three on the next.
Wow.
But because I had like 2 weeks on my own. So I was doing it during the day and everything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and the other two books, it's so funny because the characters, there's a through line, but each story is completely different. Like as much as this story, when you read it, it's a full story on its own.
Yeah.
The other one is as well. And I'll just say that Treb is involved. And it's more focused around his wife, who's talked about in this one, but not never appears. Yeah. So but what I'm saying is, so that's, I mean, how much I believed in this. And that's also none of them. Again, I didn't stop and say what rhymes with orange. So, but yeah, I think who I am, the work that I do, how I spend my life, all of that, I think came together in making the book probably unique and a bit different than it is. Mm-hmm. And I'll say even also, Brooke, one other thing that's unique is even the way we're launching this book, I don't know yet. And I mean, I'm probably wrong when I say I don't know because I'd have to do the research.
Right.
But I don't know of any other fictional parable. And there's a lot of them, but there's obviously main ones that really stand out, like some of the ones I named. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any others that have launched the way we're launching this.
Yeah.
So like most of them, and I'm really good friends with James Redfield, who wrote Celestine Prophecy.
Yeah.
Sold 40 million copies, you know, all over the world. And when they launched that book, him and his wife, they drove around in their car. It was traditional bookstores. Yeah. And they went to the bookstore. And if you were in there, they felt you deserved to get a free book because Synchronicity put you in the bookstore.
Right.
That was brilliant as well because the bookstore owners were there. So that means they get a free book. And of course, what happened a week later when they read it, they're like, this is going right in the front counter. Uh-huh. So they launched it in the traditional sense of going bookstore to bookstore. Mm-hmm. And then it was a pass along book. And then just like 1,000 a week, 3,000 a week, 5,000, 15. But it wasn't done in the type of launch we do now. And same with, I mean, Alchemist, I think there wasn't even really probably a launch. It just, right, people picked up on it. And so what I'm getting at is with this book, the way we're doing it is we have a funnel where people go to the website, they get free bonuses if they get the book. There's a whole bunch of things built in that's not traditionally done with a fictional book and definitely not done with a parable spiritual book. So yeah. I'll let you know how that works out. But right now I feel like we're treading on new ground.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, I don't think those older guys, I don't think they were doing podcasts to promote their books. I don't think that had quite entered the scene yet. But yeah, that was a whole different beast back then. Just in my lifetime, just 20 years ago, even launching a book was completely different.
Yeah, and honestly, my first book that I was involved in I don't think it was 20. I feel like I wrote my first book in 2007, which was an anthology where I wrote a chapter, but then quickly after I wrote my first actual book.
Uh-huh.
The reason I don't consider it one of those books when I said I've only really done three is it was called Conversations With, and it was interviews I'd done that we then put into a book. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel like that was me writing a book. It was like me compiling a book. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, that was like 2007. And even the way we sold it then was totally different. Like it was consignment at Amazon or consignment, sorry, at Chapters in Canada and Barnes and Noble. Mm-hmm. And it was like a consignment part of it. But one big thing that we did that I will eventually do with this book, but I actually am trying not to do it during the launch, is I sold a lot of books in bulk,
mm-hmm.
which most people don't do. But what I did was this Conversations With, the people that we did the stories on were entrepreneurs. So we would talk to them and say, hey, do you want to give like 50 to your staff at Christmas? You guys are in the book.
Yeah.
Do you want to send it to 50 clients so they can say, oh my God, you're in a book. And so we really built a bulk type sale thing. And we ended up, I mean, not to go down the rabbit hole, but we ended up selling, I think like maybe 15,000 copies of these books. And this was in a region that only has like 1 million people.
Wow.
So it worked, the bulk sales. The problem with that is those five books, only one of them made a bestseller list because we basically sidetracked the whole thing. We never even went through that system. And one of them, I didn't even know it made it. And somebody told me, oh, there's this bookseller list called Bookmark, which is like was a book chain. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like Barnes and Noble. And yeah, you're like number two this week. And I'm like, oh, awesome. So, but back then, I mean, we're going 2006, 2007. There wasn't as many people doing Amazon launches. So like we did these books, sold a lot of books, more than a lot of people doing the launches and getting on the bestseller list, but mm-hmm. we never made a list because we didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
It was
wow.
different.
Definitely. Yeah, totally. Totally. Okay. So what were you doing, I guess, career-wise when you wrote this, when this came to you, when this book came to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, career-wise, it's pretty much to a large degree the same as now. But so, I mean, I'll say what I was doing, but then it's evolved a bit. But I was a professional speaker for 22 years is how long I've been doing it. And somewhere along that way, I launched a business publication, newspaper, but like Success Magazine or Entrepreneur Magazine. And we launched that, ran it for 7 years. And then that evolved into online radio, which then evolved into a podcast. And for all that time, I've been obsessed with interviewing people. So I've been continuing these interviews that I mentioned earlier, and also was getting paid to speak. And that's the speaking was paying the bills and a passion. The interviews was feeding my curiosity and obsession with interviews and learning about people. And then 4.5 years ago, and this is skipping a lot of stuff, but 4.5 years ago, we launched our brand called Blue Talks, BLU. Which stands for Business Life Universe. I jokingly said it's basically if you took Chicken Soup for the Soul and TEDx and you married them and sent them on the honeymoon, we'd be the baby that came back. But ultimately what we're doing is we run stages. So we bring our event to like Harvard, Columbia, Oxford, and we get people on those stages. We film their talks. We get them footage they can use and leverage to build their own expert business. We also have an anthology book series, so we publish books. And originally, I was thinking about publishing this through our own publishing entity, and there's reasons I didn't go that route. But so we put books out, and we'll have big name thought leaders write the foreword. So we've had James Redfield from Celestine, who I mentioned, Ken Honda from Mindvalley, Joe Vitale from The Secret, Marie Diamond from The Secret, Randy Spelling from 90210. The new one coming up is the late Bob Proctor. I think that's fascinating. We're putting out a book with Bob Proctor after he's been gone for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Thinking, how's that possible? But we got permission from his widow and his son to transcribe an interview I did with him before he passed and turn it into a foreword. And then his son's going to write a second foreword in the same book. Okay. So I say all that to say Blue Talks is like, I don't say I'm retired from speaking, but I'm pretty close. Like I speak at our events and then somebody can convince me to speak if I'm already in town. But I mean, there were years I was doing 200 paid talks a year. Wow. And now I do 20, that would blow my mind. Like, I don't even think I do that many. So truly I'm focusing on building this brand that's like TEDx and that's what we're doing behind the scenes. And that, when you asked what was I juggling whenever I came up with the book? Well, this book, I mean, I started it, I think I want to say 3 years ago. So obviously Blue Talks was still running then. Like we were already running. So I've been doing the Blue Talks thing while we've been doing it. Some speaking, but not a lot. Obsessed with interviewing people. So interviewing people, raising a 6 and a 3-year-old, traveling all over the place, never stopping traveling and launching the Blue Talks brand during COVID. So
not a lot.
No, and then by the way, which is kind of fascinating to me, this book, and I'm not meaning, it's funny because I'm sort of plugging this book that I'm not even trying to sell anymore, but this book, we launched it and we were supposed to fly to Nashville March 13th, 2020 to do the red carpet thing. And bottom line is our flight kept getting delayed. And then eventually we got to the thing. We said, maybe the universe is telling us not to go. And we went to the counter and they said, well, I don't know if the universe is, but we're telling you because you like your flight's not going to make it. You won't make your connecting flight. And so we canceled the flight. And this was whenever Shelly was pregnant and we asked the doctor and they said, COVID, there's only one case in Tennessee, the whole country or whole state. You should be fine. And then literally it went from that 2 weeks before we went to the day we were supposed to be on the stage, me supposed to be getting an award and on the red carpet, literally the news announced COVID's now a pandemic. So my book launch day was pandemic day. If you could pick a worse time to launch a book, I'd love to know it. Yeah. And so honestly, the book had overshadowed. It sold thousands of copies, but I'll never know what it could have done.
Yeah.
And this is my kind of second chance at that bat. And I will say so much so that part of one of the things I was going to do with that book is we had, and they're over there, we had all these packages ready to send out to like Oprah's book club, Reese Witherspoon's book club, Success Magazine for book reviews. And it was like this box and it has like a key in it that says abundance on it. Like this little cool thing. We're like, here you go, Oprah, here's a gift. And we literally, I said, there's no point in doing this now. Oprah does not care about my book now. She cares about a pandemic.
Right.
And so those boxes are sitting over there. And now the new books, it's available now, but I'm supposed to have physical copies in my hand in the next week. And that's one of the things we're doing with them is we're literally doing the launch we were supposed to do the first time.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. That's insane. Yeah, COVID messed up everything.
It was a little intense.
Yeah. Wow. So I think that's, I just think that's amazing that you've been able to incorporate all the knowledge that like use your interviews as a way to create, to make a book. I think that's the perfect outlet for like all the interviews that you've done with all the notable people. And I just think that's huge because it's like not something you want to, because I do a lot of interviews, not with people as famous as you have, but I think that it's like, I think that that's such a, I think there that's such a valuable commodity just to be able to talk to people and learn from them. And I think that especially you with the big name people that you have, I think that that's amazing. And I think that's fantastic that you were able to incorporate it into this, this fantastic manuscript.
Well, thank you so much. And I will say it's definitely on brand for me. Like it's the, whatever the brand is, it's been all the way through. It's been built around my obsession with learning from people mm-hmm. and then sharing that insight with other people. I mean, really, if you wanted to summarize what the last 20 years has looked like, I feel like that's what my 20 years has been. Because mm-hmm. if I'm on a stage speaking, even before I was helping other speakers, I was still sharing what I learned during those interviews.
Right.
If I was running a podcast, I'll reference somebody else on the show when I'm interviewing somebody that mm-hmm. came from my knowledge from interviewing them. So like if I'm interviewing Lisa Nichols about The Secret, let's say, and then a couple weekends ago, I was interviewing Mike Dooley, who wrote, he does the Notes from the Universe. And so they're both in The Secret together. So I might say to Mike, you know what, I was talking to Lisa about The Secret. And here's something she said to me. I wonder your thoughts on this. Well, the previous interview let me do that. Also that I have a good memory, but the previous interview let me do that. And to that point, it's on brand because it makes sense that I would say, well, Lisa mentioned that she felt the law of action, you know, was one of the things they could have added into The Secret. And then, you know, Mike will say, well, it's interesting she said that. And dot, dot, dot. Right. So all of it, I think, is on brand. So the interesting part is it wasn't intended. I will say when I came up with the concept of this book, it was never intended to be on brand. I didn't think I would be referencing thought leaders and all that. I didn't know that would weave its way in. Mm-hmm. And the other two books in the quote unquote series that eventually came out, there's not as much of that. I wanted them to feel like separate entities that are completely mind blowing. Yeah. And that was the goal. And so just to say that, you know, what you said, it's weaved its way in. I didn't expect that, but it also is on brand for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's amazing. And I wanted to ask you what is before we close, I wanted to ask you what your favorite lesson was out of the flight.
Wow. So, because it's interesting, because it's meta in some ways, as they say, the metaverse, because I'm really saying what is the, to me, the most valuable or powerful or lesson that stands out to me from my interviews, because obviously that's where it's built around. And so it's not that I have a hard time picking one. It's that I have a hard time only picking one.
Right.
And so the two that I'll tell you two. So the two that are back and forth with me, the two that jumped out to me, and one of them is not really maybe a full lesson in the book. It's like a part of a lesson, mm-hmm. which kind of blows my mind because it changed my whole life and it's only like a part of a lesson.
Yeah.
But one of them is the power of no.
Yeah.
So one of the things, I don't think I say this exact number in the book because it's varied as I've gone through our past interviews, but what I've discovered is thought leaders, influencers, what have you, say no on average, I'll say between 20 to 50 times more than the average person.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been taught, not so we, in generalization, a lot of people have been taught say yes to everything and then mm-hmm. figure it out and do it later. Mm-hmm. And I heard a Richard Branson quote when I was younger that said that. And I'm like, well, God, the guy's running 200 and some businesses. Maybe you should say yes to everything.
Right.
But what I didn't know until I found it later is that was a partial quote. And the mm-hmm. quote was actually say yes to everything you want to and love doing.
Yeah.
Figured how to do it later. That's a big distinction.
Definitely.
And so what I've noticed that high achievers have done, so this is one of the lessons, is where I grew up in a small town, was taught to say yes to everything. I noticed that high achievers say no to all the things that won't move the needle, so they can say yes to the few things that will move the needle. And what I also realized part of that is everything that you say yes to is a no to something else that you yeah. might not even know you had had the opportunity for.
Mm-hmm.
So under, and by the way, the hard part is, and why I recommend people do it this way, is the hard part is to say no when you're just starting, because
yeah.
there's so many opportunities and you're thinking anything could blow up what I do and tell people about me.
Right.
But what I would say is it's better and easier to work that muscle when you're just starting,
yeah.
because it's not as hard to say no. When you got like an opportunity for, say, somebody's going to pay you $50,000 to do a 10 minute talk, but you're going to disparage yourself and your family.
Mm-hmm.
It might be when you're just starting, that's going to be really hard to say no to.
Yeah.
But after you get going, then you have to really sit with it and say, is that really a no? But if it's like a small thing, because most, you're not probably going to have that opportunity when you're just starting. So when you're just starting, it could be an opportunity of like, hey, can you share my, let's say if you have an email list of 2,000 people, can you share my this with your email list? And you might want to say yes to everybody doing that, but you might sit with it and say, well, this really, what they want me to share isn't really on brand. Like maybe it's political and right. You don't want to be political. What I'm saying is it's a lot easier to say that when you're early on than it is when it's an opportunity. Like I interviewed Ken Honda a couple weeks ago, and he said to me that somebody approached him about turning his happy money concept into cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. And they want to pay him $1 million as an ambassador and stock in the company. So when it blew up, he'd, you know, make more. And he sat with it overnight. The next day he came back and said, this doesn't feel right. I don't know why. It just doesn't. So I'm sorry. I have to say no. Yeah. 3 years later, they got audited with whatever crypto they did. They got put in jail, everything. Wow. So you could go and say, well, his intuition was right. But the bigger thing is, how hard is it to say no to $1 million? That's basically feels like free money.
Yeah.
The thing is, you don't practice the no muscle when it's only not sharing it with your newsletter. How are you going to do it when you get to that stage? So for me, I think start doing it earlier. So the lesson out of that is that you need to figure out quickly what is a yes and what is a no for you, and then be comfortable or build the muscle of saying no. And that ties into the second one, which is writing a personal mission statement.
Okay.
And so I believe every person, just like most big companies that have been successful, have a mission statement. I think we should be the CEO of our own lives. Yeah. So we need our own mission statement. And when we have that mission statement, it'll allow us what a no and a yes is really quickly. So to put that into terms that make sense, my mission statement is to be the guy who motivates, donates, educates, inspires, and entertains. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody asked me, will you do this? If it's one of those or zero, it's the easiest no without regret ever. Yeah. Even if it's, do you want your own TV show? But it's going to be about food. And I like food, but I'm not knowledgeable on it. It wouldn't fit my brand. It would take me further off brand.
Right.
But if somebody said, do you want your own show? And as part of the show, we're going to do a giveaway every week. So there's the donating. And you on the show, we want you to inspire people, educate, and entertain them. Mm-hmm. You can see right there, it's 4 or 5 already. Right. That's an easy yes without regret. So for me, doing a mission statement, which can take you 5 minutes or 5,000 years, mm-hmm. but doing a mission statement, which I have mine carry around with me, doing a mission statement allows you to discover what is really in alignment and what is a yes and what is really a no. So what I'm saying is I would use the two together. Do the mission statement so you know what a no is, and then practice saying no more often. Mm-hmm. I think those are two of the most powerful lessons to me that I had to learn in real time, which real time ended up being over the course of probably a couple of years.
Wow. Yeah. I was going to say, I think that's probably my favorite. Learning to say no was probably my favorite as well, because I think that's something that's hard for me to do. Because I don't know what might end up just being synchronous. Is that the right word?
It works. Synchronistic, I think, was if we say it that way, or yeah.
So I don't know if I'm like saying no to something that happened to be just synchronistic and just something that would ultimately help me, just because I don't know. But yeah, to your point, I love what you said. That's a very good argument for it.
Well, and honestly, I will say, I don't think there's a magic pill that makes it so that every time you say yes or no, you're right. Meaning mm-hmm. like there's maybe going to be sometimes you're wrong, but I would rather be wrong 1 out of 10 times and right 9. And when I say right, I mean like saying no to things that aren't in alignment 9 times and then missing the one that could have been in alignment, mm-hmm. then saying yes to everything. And then it becomes a question of how much can you take on sanity wise? Are you going to burn yourself out? There's so many other what happens when you mm-hmm. take on too much. And yeah. so people always say to me, how do you get so much done? And part of it is focusing only on what I feel I need to get done and mm-hmm. saying no to the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is so fabulous. So when is the book coming out, or is it out?
The book is officially, okay. So as a person's listening to it, probably my answer is yes. So literally the funnel, we reviewed it today. So that's the website where you can buy the book. Okay. We reviewed it today and we're testing it tomorrow. So mm-hmm. I'd say anytime between tomorrow and Monday. So those days mean nothing to somebody depending when they're listening, because this is evergreen. But what I'm getting at is truly, I'm saying that in case this goes live tomorrow, but if it doesn't, by the time you listen to it, so I'm saying no, it won't. So by the time you listen to it, the book is out, basically. Awesome. And when I say that, this isn't just like it should be ready or what have you. The book is actually available now. You can buy it now on most bookstores.
Okay.
The website, though, and this is, it's a vested interest to you and us. The website is where we want people to buy it. And the reason for that is on the website, we have it set up so you can get free bonuses. Mm-hmm. And they're all free. And you literally can buy it through your favorite retailer anyway. And it only takes you 1 minute longer and you get a whole bunch of free stuff. So, and the benefit to us is that, well, more people know about the work we do, but really we're still sending it through the retailer because we still want it to count towards bestseller lists. Uh-huh. But for us, the benefit is then we have a little more control of knowing who bought what, because I'm with a traditional publisher. So okay. It might take them 2 months to report to me. So it's hard to keep track. But if we have people going through the website, we get a somewhat of a feel. Mm-hmm. But in return for that, the favor is we're giving away a cool, bunch of cool gifts. So if a person goes to thisisthebook.com, okay. thisisthebook.com, and on that, it'll walk you right through. But on the site, it says step one. And literally, it has the links. And you click on, say, Barnes & Noble. You go there. You come back. Enter your order number and your email, because we got to send them somehow. And then literally, probably instantaneously, but we'll send you 5 bonuses. The bonuses, top of mind without looking, one is a top 10 insights PDF guide, which is the top 10 things I learned from thought leaders. And they're not the same 10 lessons as in the book, because it was done before that. There's access to a training I do around how to land a branded talk, like a TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. There's access to the newest version of my book called Get Paid to Speak. Mm-hmm. There's access to 3 videos that were done through the founders of Mind Movies. Mm-hmm. And that what that is just like a video vision board thing that they launched right near The Secret. And it's them sharing how to set goals and how to manifest and how they launched their business as a couple and all those kind of things. So you get free that free training. And then also I did a training at Stanford that I never aired. And so me with a flip chart talking about what I learned that individuals, companies, experts have in common whenever they are able to charge what they're worth. So when you look at like Apple and Disney and Starbucks, how come they can charge more than everybody else and still have more clients? I dissected all that and I reveal that in the talk. So those are some of the bonuses you get literally for buying a $16 and something cent US book.
Nice. That's awesome. That's really cool. Oh, and that's another thing I wanted to ask you about. You had an influencer podcast or influencer radio show. I want to find out more about that.
Okay,
where can people find out about that?
Yeah, so it's funny. We have a couple. Well, okay, so it sounds crazy. We have a few shows. One of them is Blue Talk. So I won't even include that in the same. It's almost like TEDx has their own TEDx podcast. Mm-hmm. So we have Blue Talks. But we also have, which is kind of fascinating, we have The Enlightened Passenger is also a podcast.
Okay.
And we're just about to kick off season 2. In season 2, we have like Tommy Chong's going to be on it. Brian Austin Green from 90210 and Anger Management.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of really epic guests coming on season 2. And then we also have Let's Do Influencing, which is the original OG podcast, the one I launched back like 20 years ago almost. Mm-hmm. That one still goes, and we bring on influencers and we talk about influence. Mm-hmm. And we go all over the place in conversation, like a coffee style conversation. And The Enlightened Passenger, the commitment we made is every episode be under 20 minutes. So it's like a quick get in, learn what Deepak Chopra would say to a passenger on a plane, get back out. So I don't want to confuse people. I would say if you Google my name, mm-hmm. and podcast, you'll find those. But the other option is if you go on the book site, even if you don't decide to buy the book, you reach out through there and you'll be connected with me. If you do buy the book, you literally, when you get the bonus gifts, it'll have how you can reach me there. And then you can find all the different links there as well. I say all that, Brooke, because I don't want to confuse people and say, here's 5 links. Because my experience is if you give people even 3 links, they'll go to 0. If you give them 1, they'll go to 1. So I can still maintain that this is thebook.com, but I'm on all social platforms for the most part. And also you can Google my name. It's unique enough. You'll find me there too.
Okay. Cool. And how do you pronounce your last name?
The best that I can do is Poirier.
That's what I was kind of leaning towards, but I wasn't sure. Poirier. Awesome.
Yeah. It's a very French name. And I say it in a very English way. So that's why I always say the best that I can do.
Okay. Got it. Well, thank you so much, Corey. I have so enjoyed this and I loved I loved your book, and think everyone else will love it and benefit from it. And very, very eager to excited to hear what's going to happen with it. And would love to have you on again sometime if you're game.
I absolutely am. With your permission, let's call it a to be continued. And sure. Then also I'll say till next time. But yes, thank you so much, Brooke. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Great talking to you, Corey.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn this off now. But okay, this should post probably in a couple weeks at the least, maybe more. But I actually think that it was supposed, she said I wasn't supposed to start promoting till like, so I guess a few months out. So I might wait. But I've loved, this is awesome. You're a great chatter and I love it. This is great. So if you could share this with your people, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely will. Yeah, I've been in this game a long time, and when I first started, I thought everybody will just share it, and it doesn't happen. So yeah, I appreciate you asking, but I am the sharer person, and at the same time, I would share it anyway. But it's even more of a vested interest because I'm launching the book. So it's like every week I'm going to be saying, here's some of the different things we did this week, and I'll highlight them all. Mm-hmm. And so my newsletter, I mean, it's a good size. It's growing. It's 30,000 roughly. So I'll put it in there as well. And yeah, we'll do what we can to bring some eyeballs and ears.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And best of luck with the book, because like I said, it's just amazing, and I will have no problem promoting it because it's awesome.
Again, I thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I will say it was definitely a labor of love.
Awesome. I believe it. And you can tell. You can tell.
Aw, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Brooke. And yeah, I'll circle back. Let's do this again. Once the dust settles on the launch, if you're up for it, I'll circle back and look to bring you onto my show as well.
Oh,
and yeah, let's just, we'll continue to network together and work together, and then let me know if I can help in any way. And once I know this is live, I'll do what I can to get it out to the world.
Cool. Thank you so much. Thanks, Corey. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, Brooke. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thank you so much to Corey Poirier for chatting with me about your book. It's absolutely fabulous in more ways than one. I guarantee you'll be a different person after reading it. Be sure to use the link in the post to purchase. It'll give you access to a bunch of free goodies that you won't be able to get anywhere else. Thanks for listening. This is a Hotspur Media production, music by Corey Knoxville.